This is All of It with Kusha Navidar. That's me. I'm in for Allison Stewart. It's time for another edition of Food for Thought. And today we are taking a journey around Korea with some very expert tour guides. Chef and cookbook Dookie Hong and food writer Matt Rodbard. The pair collaborated a few years ago on their hit cookbook Koreatown. And now they are back with their next installment. It's called Korea World, a cookbook. Dookie and Matt spent some time traveling all around Korea to mine the differences between urban and rural cuisine, to speak to chefs breaking new culinary ground, and to bring some of those recipes back to you, the reader. Plus, they visit Koreatowns all across the United States to investigate new fusion inventions like kimchi hot dogs and Korean nachos, which makes my mouth water because Korean food happens to be one of my favorite kinds of food, so I'm very excited. Excited about this segment. The book is part cookbook, part culinary history, and part photography book, and the awesome photos in here are by Alex Lau. Korea World, a cookbook, is out now, and Dookie Hong and Matt Rodbard join me now in studio to discuss. Welcome, both of you.
Hey, Kusha, thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you here live in studio. And listeners, even though you're not live with us, we still want to hear from you. If you're Korean or Korean-American, what's a comfort food that you love? Something that reminds you of home? What's a dish you think more people should know about? Or maybe you just have some questions for our guests about where to get started when cooking Korean food at home. So give us a call. Send us a text. We're at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WN. NYC. All right, let's dive into it. So you begin the introduction with the sentence, "You are about to read the story of a culinary revolution." Dookie, what is revolutionary about Korean cuisine in recent decades?
Absolutely. And that whole phraseology, that saying is by Matt, and we put it on t-shirts. That's how strongly we feel about this culinary revolution. Cultural, music, arts, revolution as a whole, and culinary is a big part of that. And it's something that we feel like has been going on, but maybe no one has really been talking about. And Matt Rodbard, and as you said, our photographer Alex Lau, three of us, little ragtag crew, got to travel Korea for 2-3 years and document it.
Yeah, so tell me about it, Matt. You're the one that wrote that line. What does it mean to you?
That line to me means really what we've been kind of experiencing to us as a group for 13 years is this building of energy towards this moment where revolution, it is the biggest food movement, not just in Korean cooking, but in all of food. Mm-hmm. And I write about food at Taste, where I'm an editor-in-chief, so I don't just write about Korean cookbooks or cooking, but I feel like this is the biggest story. You can see Pete Wells in the New York Times writing about Korean food like he would write about French and Italian. Mm-hmm. He's every 5 or 6 restaurants is a Korean restaurant you see in the national scene. This revolution is happening. And one cool thing in Korea we write about is what's happening in Korea, mm-hmm. and how those ideas are floating back to New York City where the listeners live.
Do you feel like it's more than just food? I mean, to me, it's pretty obvious that it's like K-pop, K-drama, mm-hmm. that's all linked, right?
Yeah, they call it Hallyu. It's the Korean wave, and it's a cultural movement. And of course, you know, films like Parasite have won the Oscar, and K-pop is massive. And also, you go through Netflix, and you look at the shows, and you've got these amazing Korean dramas that are resonating with all sorts of audiences. Korean food has been swept up in this wave, and really, to us, it's right now is this movement where food is actually maybe transcending K-pop and transcending cinema, and we're young chefs now who are maybe not Korean want to cook all sorts of Korean dishes for fun.
Absolutely. When I was, as a Korean American chef here, when I was growing up cooking a very long time ago, I don't want to do the math, not many Korean chefs were cooking Korean food. Mm. We were like, we want French, we want Italian. But now we're embracing it. We're going back to cook in our home country, in Korea. Michelin came there 5-6 years ago, and it's just been another level, and yeah, we get to talk about it.
Let's dive into the food a little bit. What are some of the core ingredients that everyone looking to cook Korean food at home should make sure that they have in their pantry?
I would say some familiar and unfamiliar ingredients. Some familiar ones would be garlic, onions, ginger. Some unfamiliar ones, we call it changs, or the mother sauces of Korean cooking. The gochujang, the doenjang, which is fermented soybean paste, and ganjang, soy sauce, pretty familiar. If you have those, it's pretty much the pantry of Korea. It can really welcome you into most of our Korean dishes. And it's Korean food in general is very simple. A lot of it is very simple one-pot meals. And yeah, it's very approachable. So
we love to think about, especially for New York listeners, you know, you can go to any shop, any bodega on the corner and find literally 98% of the ingredients in our book. I mean, you can see gochujang, tenjang, you know, the red and the brown tubs you find. You can find it at any Korean owned or any market. But as Dookie said, it's like garlic. It's like foundational, like rice vinegar. We cook with all of these things. And just to reiterate, in Korea world, I mean, our recipes, many of them are under 30 minutes. Oh. There's a lot of knife skills. Anyone who's cooked Korean food knows you're going to be really nice with the knives because there's a lot of chopping and cutting. But honestly, the larder is very pared down.
Wow. And I love that you brought up listeners, because listeners, we want you to be a part of this conversation. If you're Korean or Korean American, what's a comfort food that you love? What's something that reminds you of home? If you're like me and you just love Korean food, what's a dish you think more people should know about? Or do you have questions for our guests? We've got Dookie Hong and Matt Rodbard. They're authors of the book Korea World, a cookbook. Listen, give us a call. Send us a text. We're at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Or you can hit us up on social. We're on Instagram. We're on X. We're at All of It WNYC. All right, let's get into the travel a little bit, because this is a big part of the book. It seems like you've traveled all over the world for this cookbook. Matt, how did you decide where you were going?
It's a great question. We made a very distinct choice that we wanted to write the first cookbook of its kind, a book to report from Korea in the English language. And we really did that. We went to Korea many times. We both, Dookie and I have been there over 8 times. And we feel we traveled to Seoul, of course, the capital of Korea. But we also traveled all around the country to Gangwon-do in the northeast. We went to Jeollabuk-do down south. We went to Busan and Jeju Island. And really what we wanted to do with Alex along for the ride, taking photos, is give a documentary approach of Korea and Korean food. The first time any English language book has done this, and to us, we had to really make choices when traveling. And like, the travel was fun, obviously. Yeah. We like enjoyed dining out like totally. 8 times a day, right? You love Korean food, you want to be the one to join us. But we felt like we wanted to do a blend of like, you know, mom and pop places, but also high-end dining, because that's really happening too.
Yeah, and Korea World, our cookbook, it's such a lofty title when you were like, and we get a lot of comments about the title, but this is also like our letter to the world saying, hey, this is Korea.
And world. You know, you differentiate in the book between urban and rural cuisine. So Dookie, in general, what are the most significant differences there?
Yeah, urban, so Seoul, Korea, even me as a Korean chef got to really learn like what is Seoul food. And we really want to talk about this regionality. And a lot of Italy has like Sicilian and Northern Italian. Korea has the same. Like you go to Jeju, very different kind of dishes that are well known and indigenous, kind of, not indigenous, like really well-known ingredients that really grow from there. Seoul is very modern, and we use the term modern Korea a lot, and Seoul's really pushing that forefront. Or you drive a couple hours south, and it's very, you know, we stayed 2 nights, 3 nights in a temple cuisine at, up in the mountains with no contact from the world, and that was also a beautiful experience.
Yeah, and for temple cuisine, we really wanted to focus on not the woman who was on Netflix and Jung Kwon, a very famous chef. We wanted to go to actually a workaday temple. We wanted to spend time with real monks and nuns and see what they ate. And we spent, as you said, many days in temples cooking in the rest, you know, in the canteen essentially. Mm-hmm. And we found that plant based cooking in Korea, and we have a whole section about plant based cooking, can be as exciting as barbecue and like a lot of the kind of tropes that a lot of folks think of Korean food. You know, we found this one dish. It's like cold broccoli salad with tenjang, aioli or mayonnaise. And really, it's a really simple, like 10-minute dish. But you add tenjang with mayonnaise and a little bit of sesame oil. And I hope, listener, your mouth is watering, because mine is too. And I just love cooking this dish.
We've got some callers that I'd love to get to. Here's Peter in Norwalk, Connecticut. Hey, Peter, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi guys. Thanks for having me on. I wanted to mention that I think there's a huge opportunity for Korean kelp soup. They call it myeokguk. It's a very common soup, generally eaten during folks' birthdays, kind of like birthday cake. Yes. But I think there's a lot of benefits in that it could be easily made into a vegetarian dish. Mm. And there are a lot of environmental benefits given that it's an ocean plant. It's locally sourced. I often hear about there being a kelp farming industry in New Haven. Mm. And I just think that given the acceptance of Korean cuisine nowadays, there's a lot of opportunity for kelp soup in the United States to fit the American palate.
Oh, Peter, thank you much for that shout out. I appreciate it. And Dookie, I'm wondering, kelp, is that a big staple in Korean
Absolutely.
Cooking?
Like Peter mentioned, it's used in not only stocks, but in soups. There's a lot of tradition behind it. And also, it's just a delicious vegetarian option as well. So, yeah, great point, Peter.
Let's go to Tom in Garden City. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. So I see a lot of Korean restaurants popping up, barbecue and something about a pot. I want to try them, but I'm afraid because I don't know what's going to happen. Do I have to take my shoes off when I go in there? How will I order? I'm completely a newbie, so make it easier for me to go in.
Well, Tom, we appreciate the curiosity. I'll leave it to both of you. Mm. It's a wonderful welcoming experience, right? Can you tell folks a little bit what they should expect in terms of the food when they go into a Korean restaurant?
I'll leave this one to Matt because Matt is not Korean.
Sure.
listeners didn't know. Yeah. So your experience.
Well, thanks, Dougie. And really, Tom, it's very common sense, like feeling that, you know, you enter a Korean restaurant, you don't know what to order you. There's a little bit of indifference and a little bit of like I would say nerves. And I feel for you because when I started studying Korean cuisine, I was the same. But listen, it's a most hospitable culture. Ask questions. Be very open-minded. Yes, you can wear shoes in most restaurants. Maybe not at the place Hangawi on 32nd Street, but I love that they do that still. It's traditional. But really, where do you start? You start with the food that looks good to you in the restaurant on the menu. You think grilled meats is your thing? Go for it. You know, if miyukguk is your thing, maybe you want to try a seaweed-based soup. Maybe try that. You know, go to one of the newer modernist restaurants like Ari Ari downtown in the East Village doing a dish called with all bop, which is a fish roe and rice made with uni cream. It's so delicious. I love that one.
Yeah, and I can just say for my experience, because Tom, it sounds like you're looking for folks who experienced maybe Korean food a little later in life. I think I was in my mid-20s the first time I had Korean food, and bulgogi was the first thing that I had, which is short rib. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, short rib with noodles, and it was delicious and reminded me of a lot of the foods that I had before, but in a beautiful new way. So Tom, thank you so much for the curiosity. We love getting calls that want to experience all different kinds of new things. Street food, I think, is another interesting thing that I would love to dive into. Matt, what are the kinds of street foods that are most popular in Seoul specifically?
Absolutely. So we did spend time on the streets, and really a couple things come to mind. One is hotdak, which is like a donut. It's a fried dough with a sugar on top. It's a really great place on 32nd Street that does a hotdak. But I also think kimbap is a really nice street food. Mm-hmm. And that's something that is having a real moment. We write about it in Korea World in our book. Kimbap is like the Korean style of sushi, so to speak. It's like a rice roll, cooked rice wrapped in seaweed, but with cooked vegetables and pickled vegetables. And to us, we think it's a great change. It's not raw fish, but it's cooked. And there's pickle, and sometimes there's bulgogi in it. Mm-hmm. And really, I think listeners may have their favorite kimbap place. You know, there was a place on 32nd that just closed, and I'm looking for my next best kimbap experience. But we write in the book, we have a great recipe for like modernist kimbap that kind of has like, sometimes you can even have foie gras of all things in kimbap. So to me, that's a cool street food.
You know, it was one of the dishes that really interested me in the book. It was the sweet, savory egg and cheese street toast. Mm-hmm. Dookie, what goes into making that one?
Kirgori toast is, kirgori means street, literally street toast. It's vendors on the side of the road. You can find it every corner. It's eggs, so really familiar omelet of sorts, cabbage, scallions. The cool kind of thing is they put a little bit of jam, some sugar, and some ketchup on a nice little toast, and yeah.
It's such a great, it's really easy to make too. It's like one of those recipes that's like 10 to 15 minutes, you're there.
That combo sounds so good. It makes me want to dive into more. We have to take a quick break, but hey, listeners, if this sounds good to you and if you have some experience with Korean food, a dish that you want to shout out, an ingredient or a question, give us a call, send us a text. We're at 212-433-9692. We're here with Dookie Hong and Matt Rodbard. They are the authors of Korea World, a cookbook. When we come back, more of your calls and oh yeah, more food. Stay with us. This is All of It from WNYC. I'm Kusha Navadar, and hey, we are talking about Korean food, specifically a new book called Korea World, a cookbook. It's from Dookie Hong and Matt Rodbard. And listeners, we're talking to you as well about your interests, your love, your questions about Korean food. Give us a call, send us a text. We're at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. We've got another caller I would love to get to, Aaron in Katona, New York. Hi, Aaron. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Give us your story.
So I just wanted to give a shout out to a dish called naengmyeon. It's a dish that I believe actually was originated in North Korea, but I'm even afraid to call it a soup. It's really like a broth that's served ice cold with noodles. So it's super refreshing, like on a really hot day. It's usually served with vinegar and like some mustard, but it's really delicious. I don't know if people have heard of it. It's not like the traditional hot Korean like stews you usually get, and certainly not barbecue. But I was introduced to it first by my mother, who was born in Seoul, who makes delicious Korean food at home, and by her mother, who is actually from North Korea, who also was a really big influence on my life. So people who haven't tried it, naengmyeon, it's delicious on a hot summer day.
Yes, and Aaron, you nailed it. There's two main, like, popular ones. Definitely, it comes from North Korea, and there's, like, this addictive cult, like, North Korean style, but there's mulnaengmyeon, which is... like more broth-based, like you said, clear broth-based. And then there's bibimnaengmyeon, which is a little bit more spicier, more of a drier kind of cold noodles. But this whole idea of cold noodles is something that Koreans, I think, really embrace. And when eaten with like hot barbecue, this hot and cold play works really well. And I think that's what Aaron's really talking about.
Yeah, I just had bibimnaengmyeon last night. We just had a party in Koreatown to celebrate our book. And I was like, we got both, mul and bibim. Yeah. But, and I agree with Dookie. You get both sides. You can do like a little bit brothy and icy, or that like dry, spicy. What do you think? What's your favorite?
Well, you know, I was just thinking with what Aaron was saying, Dookie, that thing you brought up about hot and cold playing together, do you think that's I wouldn't say uniquely Korean thing, but do you think that is a hallmark of Korean cuisine?
Absolutely. We have this saying in Korean that's like, it's called refreshing while we're eating something really hot. It's called shionhae, but it's kind of the irony is that we're eating a steaming bowl of soup, right? Like hot soup or stew, but we're like, oh, this is so refreshing. And hot and cold play in terms of the sensational sense, but also even in terms of like, it's not just flavor. We also do a lot of temperature play. And I think that's a part of, you know, there's texture, there's flavor. But I think Koreans have really mastered, like you said, not uniquely only Korean, but we've really mastered the temperature element of dining as well.
That's wonderful. We've got a text that I would love to read out. Yeah. It says, my wife's mom is Korean, and she took us around Seoul and Jeolla. I don't know if I pronounced that right.
Yeah. Jeolla.
Jeolla. One summer, and was real excited one day to see Gangguksu Specialist Restaurant. It's noodles in a cold soybean soup. Real simple, mellow, and refreshing. We are all really enjoyed digging in on a hot summer's day in Seoul. Kind of sounds like that hot cold.
Exactly.
Yeah. And we've got another text. Yuki. Did I say that right?
UK.
Yeah. Raw meat. Yeah. Rules.
Yeah.
One more. I mean, a classic here. The text says bibimbap in a stone bowl, just to be sure to stir it like mad till it stops making the noise.
UK is a dish that I feel is really, really cool. I mean, it's kind of the steak tartare of Korean cuisine, but it's like a raw beef with like orchard fruits, like apples or pears in the marinade, very sweet with like some sesame oil in there as well, and pears sliced on top.
Just a quick note though, if you combine UK and bibimbap that was just mentioned, it's UK bibimbap. So once hot and cold play, it works.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Let's get to another caller, Lori Ann in Naples, Florida. Hey, Lori Ann, how you doing?
Hey, oh, great. How are you?
I'm wonderful, thanks. So do you like Korean food?
Good. I love it. The first place I ever had, believe it or not, was Paraguay.
Oh, wow.
So,
wow.
Barbecue. I'm a cook, and I've cooked everything but Asian until COVID, and I dip my toes in the water. So I have a lot of ingredients. But I'd like to know if I need any special equipment. I know there's not a lot of knife work. So, you know, for the audience, I already have my knife. But what about a wok? What about a hibachi?
Yeah.
What do I need? And before I forget, I'd also like to know if those cold recipe dishes are in your book, I assume so?
Yes, we have a beautiful bibimguksu recipe. So, once again, a cold noodle recipe in Korea world. And also your question about any special equipment, to be honest, not really. You know, like Chinese cooking really needs like a wok, that fire flavor. I wouldn't say Korean cooking. The good thing is it would be nice to have, but it's not a must.
I would add, for me as a non-Korean home cook, I love scissors personally. The kitchen, good
cutting
pair
scissors,
good pair of kitchen scissors can do you no wrong, especially if you're cutting, like if you're making a japchae, which is like a favorite, a cold, you know, sweet potato noodle dish with great seasonings. Mm. You want to cut it up, or even trimming meat, like before you take it to the grill. I love good scissors. So got to always buy good scissors.
Yeah, good scissors, I think, is a good call. Lori Ann, thank you so much for that call. And hey, good luck on your Korean cooking journey. I can't wait to maybe hear about what you do. If you ever start cooking, call us back. Let us know. Hey, I want to also talk about Korean towns around the U.S. And it, listeners, if you're just joining us, we're talking about Korean food. We're here with Dookie Hong and Matt Rodbard from Korea World, a cookbook. It's a book that they just published. And if you have questions about Korean food, or if there's a dish that you want to call out, give us a call, send us a text. We're at 212-433-9692. So I mentioned I want to talk about Korea towns around the U.S. Matt, what makes American Korean food different from what you would find in Korea?
Such a great question. I feel right now we're at a really cool moment for the Korean food in America, because we've got this such talent who have been training at the CIA and cooking around the world with from the Korean diaspora, individuals who are Korean, adopted Korean, Korean American, who are previously cooking so much, you know, Italian and French and Spanish, now embracing their own heritage and cooking things like bibimbap, we talked about, like really like interesting dishes. What makes a great Korean restaurant right now, honestly, it's invention. It's thinking outside barbecue and Korean tacos. It's thinking about format, like okdongsu. What's it called?
Okdongsik.
Okdongsik. Yep. Sorry, I forgot about that place. Only does one dish in Koreatown in New York. Oh. They do a pork broth. And I feel like that is the future of good Korean restaurants, is thinking about one dish. Maybe there'll be a new kimbap. Like, please, if chefs are out there, open some kimbap in New York. I'd love to see that. But dude, what do you think about Korean movement in America?
It's when we started this book 10 plus years ago, it was a completely different scene. Mm. We were discovering itself too. And it's so cool, 10 years later, we feel like we're still discovering new, you know, you would think the guys that wrote the book on Koreatowns in America would know, but no, we still feel like students, and there's so many exciting things not only happening in New York and LA, of course, but Minnesota is a big one, Atlanta, obviously. So many places that we're not even talking. We're going to DC right after this, driving down. So,
do you see those local flavors? Like, I'm thinking Atlanta versus New York versus LA. Do you see that kind of edge into what 100%. You taste? Can you give me an example of that?
Atlanta is a great point. Peaches. We made peach kimchi when we were down there, just because we, you know, we're in the land of peaches.
Gotta make peaches.
So we do make it a point to really honor, like, hey, sure, we can make the same dish every city, but what makes it unique that we're in the Atlanta Koreatown? What makes it unique that we're in Minnesota and Madison, Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, Korean food is very seasonal, of course, and like there's dishes like namu and kimchi. We think of kimchi, honestly, as a verb. You can kimchi a lot of things. It doesn't have to be cabbage per se. It can be lots of like local produce, like leeks. You could do ramps. You can use lots of different local produce. And so around the country, you see different produce seasons. Like we have a citrus salad in the book in Korea World, and you know that was from Jeju Island. It's a tangerine salad with this really great like chili and vinegar dressing that's dressed with chili, and it's like a little spicy, a little bit of a tangerine, acidic and sweet. I love this dish. I've made it several times at home. Very easy to make.
That's wonderful. There's one more dish that I want to make sure that we get to before we have to wrap. You dedicate a whole section to the creation of the Kim Jong Grillin kimchi and pickled mango dog. Matt, what makes... Oh, say, Dookie, no, if you want to say. What makes that dish so special, Matt?
Oh, I mean, our guy, Han, in Portland, and we went to Portland, Oregon, and we found it was such a great topic for us to cover the diaspora, not large in number, but large in voice in Portland. And in the book, we cover communities all around America doing exciting Korean dishes. So Han's, you know, does a pickled mango in this street truck in the middle of Portland. And to us, adding mango and having a hot dog, like, we think hot dogs actually are perfect for Korean food.
Yeah,
I feel it's like a great vehicle. Yeah. And like putting a pickled mango with chili and like some kimchi on there. Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
And that sausage that they use is from Seoul Sausage in LA, our friends over in LA. So that is such a beautiful dish that encompasses not only our friendship, not just because of us, but a very Korean hot dog. And I would say Kim Jong-grillin is like so Korean, but it's also so Portland. And I think that's what makes it really incredible.
Yeah,
that's really cool. Okay, so last thoughts. What do you hope readers learn from picking up the book? Matt, go ahead.
First thought is, like, honestly, that Korean food shouldn't ever be placed in any kind of box or have any border. We really think this is, again, a culinary movement or revolution. And really, we want folks to read our book and see that it's not what you think it is. It's unexpected. It's loud. It's proud. And as a non-Korean, as someone, as a journalist writing about food, this is the story of my life as a food writer. It's not my life, like, nationally, but it is my life as a writer. And I just think it is the greatest story of New York. And looking at the restaurant reviews that Pete Wells does and others at New York Magazine, et cetera, they're writing about Korean food all the time. What do you think?
Yeah, we're in a very special time in terms of not only the food, like you said, but the cultural, the music element of Korean food. We get to document a bit of that in Korea World. And it's an honor that we get to tell this story for the second time.
Well, if you want to check it out, be sure to get Korea World, a cookbook. It's from Dookie Hong and Matt Rodbard. Thank you both so much for hanging out. It was a wonderful time to learn more.
Such a great conversation. Thank you for having us.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.